is Nightline.
Tonight, banning drag? The new front line in America's culture war. What critics call the nation's first drag ban.
And the point is just to send a message that they don't like us and they don't want us here.
We talked to the lawmaker behind the bill.
We crafted legislation to say simply, if you're going to do something that is overtly sexually explicit, you can't do that in front of kids.
And the performers who say they will persevere.
It's impossible to legislate us out of existence.
Plus, in the hot seat, longtime Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz grilled by lawmakers.
Starbucks has waged the most aggressive and illegal union-busting campaign.
Accused of standing in the way of labor organizers.
Starbucks Coffee Company unequivocally has not broken the law.
What do we want? A contract!
As workers across the country fight for a better deal.
No coffee!
Wouldn't you prefer that the worker who's making your latte is able to afford their rent and gas versus padding a CEO's pockets?
And Jeremy Renner, the Diane Sawyer exclusive.
Someone's been run over by a snowcat. Hurry.
The actor opens up for the first time since he was crushed.
Do you remember the pain?
Oh, all of it. Yeah, I was awake through every moment.
Risking his own life to save his nephew.
I'd do it again.
Nightline. We'll be right back.
Thanks for joining us. We begin tonight in Tennessee, a state that's now ground zero in the cultural controversy over drag shows. The performers there say the new legislation targets them. And while it's the country's first law of its kind, it may not be the last. Here's ABC's Alex Perez.
Did somebody order a giant woman? Because here I am.
On a recent Sunday afternoon, Slade Kyle performed as drag queen Bella DeBall at the Atomic Rose in downtown Memphis.
I'm your little show hostess, the Bluff City bombshell, Miss Bella DeBall.
But at this show,
there are a lot of us out here.
Kyle feels like they are in the state's crosshairs.
There have been public drag performances in this state for over 50 years, and we're not going anywhere.
This weekend, what critics call the nation's first drag ban goes into effect. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee signed it into law earlier this month.
Drag is under attack here in the state of Tennessee. My sentiments exactly.
The bill has become the latest flashpoint in the culture wars. So far, 14 states have introduced so-called anti-drag legislation, including Arizona, Kentucky, and Oklahoma.
Drag queens have been around since before there were laws to be written, and so it's impossible to legislate us out of existence.
Drag diva RuPaul recently weighing in on Instagram.
Drag queens are the Marines of the queer movement. Don't get it twisted and don't be distracted.
It is the second law passed in Tennessee this year affecting the LGBTQ community. The state also passed a law banning gender-affirming care for minors. At least 21 states are considering similar bills.
Our children are not guinea pigs for science experimentation, and we cannot allow people to make money off mutilating them.
According to the ACLU, these bills are just some of the more than 430 pieces of legislation potentially impacting the LGBTQ population nationwide.
The one and only, Shaquina.
In Tennessee, the unprecedented law going into effect on Saturday bans any sexually explicit performance by cabaret performers in front of children. But Slade Kyle points out it's unclear what that actually means.
The language applies to adult cabaret performers who appeal to a prurient interest. And prurient here in Tennessee means a morbid or shameful obsession with sex. The bill makes very little distinction as to what drag or a male and female impersonator actually is.
Tennessee State Senate Majority Leader Jack Johnson sponsored the bill.
Explain to us, what is this bill and why you believe there's a need for it?
Probably over the last year to 18 months, there have been a number of videos that have surfaced in various places that portrayed, I think, what any reasonable person would believe to be sexually explicit entertainment taking place in front of kids. There was a lot of outrage, I think, from parents and people here in the state wanting to know, how in the world can you do something that is so sexually explicit in front of kids?
In your view, can drag performances still occur, like, for instance, in parks, or should they not be happening?
Drag shows can exist in public parks. They can take place anywhere else. They just can't cross that line.
Will drag queens or people, perhaps a trans person, a man who's dressed as a woman who's walking down the street, will they still be allowed to sort of freely walk as who they are, or should they be afraid?
No, they shouldn't be afraid. That's not the reason for this bill. It really has nothing to do with drag. It has to do with sexually explicit entertainment in front of kids.
I think all adults are able to discern what is or is not appropriate to do in front of a minor. When it's a family-friendly or all-ages audience with children present, the last thing in the world that we want to do is be a scarring experience for a kid.
LGBTQ culture has rapidly become integrated into mainstream culture, like the anthem about queer acceptance, Born This Way, by pop icon Lady Gaga. I'm on the right track, baby. I was born this way. The legalization of same-sex marriage. The proliferation of LGBTQ characters in popular shows.
You may now kiss your husband.
We know that the world has definitely changed.
Peppermint is an LGBTQ advocate and runner-up on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Are definitely more queer out people than ever, especially in media, film, television, and entertainment, which is a great thing. With so much visibility comes a great big backlash.
Recently, that backlash has focused intensely on drag queen story hours.
We're just there to teach children all about inclusivity, diversity, and ultimately just having the free will as a human being to be creative and express yourself however you see fit.
Is drag dangerous because there are people who are engaging in a gender expression that you think is bad? Is it bad to be gay? Is it bad to be queer? Is that what you're trying to avoid? Because drag brunches are not going to make your children gay. They're not going to turn your children trans.
A handful of LGBTQ parents brought their kids to the all-ages rainbow brunch in Tennessee.
The only thing that bothered my children was how loud it was. That's it.
We live 2 hours away, and there aren't any that we can bring kids to where we live.
State Senator Johnson points to videos with behavior that he says is not appropriate for children.
We crafted legislation to say, simply, if you're going to do something that is overtly sexually explicit, then it has to be age-restricted. You can't do that in front of kids. I saw a video of a performer, being careful how I say this because it's tough to talk about these things, where an entertainer was dancing across the stage with prosthetic bare breast, bouncing around and waving. Others where performers were simulating sex acts on stage in front of kids.
In the video that Johnson's office provided, you can see what appears to be a minor speaking to another drag queen. This video from a suburb just outside of Nashville took place at an outdoor pride event late last year.
This type of entertainment shouldn't take place in a public park or even in a private venue where a parent has a reasonable expectation that they can take their child and not have their child exposed to something so graphic.
Just days before the law takes effect, LGBTQ leaders are bracing for what could come next, as advocates hope it won't have a legal impact on the community.
If they attempt to tell me that I can no longer welcome children into our all-ages performance in this safe space, I will not comply.
And Slade Kyle promises, no matter what, their shows won't change.
Is this 2023 in America? Because that blows my mind. It just doesn't seem right. And the point is just to send a message that they don't like us and they don't want us here. And that's deeply painful.
Our thanks to Alex. Up next, the heated moments on Capitol Hill as the former Starbucks CEO is accused of union busting. Can Starbucks workers prevail?
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's been said there's strength in numbers, and that's exactly what workers in hundreds of Starbucks say they need to stand up for their rights. But is the company going too far to stand in their way? Here's ABC's senior congressional correspondent, Rachel Scott.
Maggie Carter!
Maggie Carter!
For years, 28-year-old Starbucks barista Maggie Carter has been at the forefront of her store's fight to unionize.
What I'm mostly looking forward to is seeing a billionaire be held accountable for his actions.
And today, she's taking her message to Capitol Hill.
I'm a single mother working tirelessly for this company for 4 years, and I'm certainly not alone in feeling nothing but left behind during a time where everything we knew about the world was uncertain.
Maggie and thousands of other Starbucks employees, called partners, say unionizing is their best shot at representation against the billion-dollar company.
It's well past time for the company to bargain in good faith. Help us hold them accountable.
Over the past 18 months, Starbucks has waged the most aggressive and illegal union-busting campaign in the modern history of our country.
Senators grilling recently departed interim CEO Howard Schultz over allegations that he and the company repeatedly violated labor laws.
Mr. Schultz, I am seriously concerned by reports that Starbucks is coercing and retaliating against workers for exercising their rights to organize. For example, by unjustly firing workers who are involved in union organizing, conducting surveillance of union organizers, and reducing their work hours.
I had no involvement in any specific issue that regards a union in a district or a store. We have never, ever taken any benefit away, and we never would, of anyone who was interested in joining a union.
Starbucks is just one of several giant corporations who've seen their workers pursue union formation in the past few years. From Home Depot to Amazon to Disney, ABC's parent company, American workers are seeking out unions to improve pay, benefits, and working conditions. In fact, support for labor unions has increased since the pandemic, with about 71% of Americans in support.
There's been a real shift in worker attitudes, particularly younger workers. This generation, younger generation, has different attitudes about unions, about worker rights, about their expectations. Any company's gonna have to adapt to that.
But only 10% of the American workforce is unionized, the lowest on record. As the labor movement has brewed across the country, a Starbucks store in Buffalo, New York, became the first to unionize in 2021. Since then, over 250 stores have voted to unionize, although that's a small fraction of almost 9,000 company-owned stores nationwide.
If you go back to the 50s and 60s, part of the reasons the unions were able to be successful is they could organize these large industrial plants, auto plants, steel plants, with thousands or tens of thousands of workers all at once. A service sector business like a Starbucks here, a lot of them have small individual workplaces all over the place. And that's a real barrier to union organizing.
For the past 4 years, this Knoxville, Tennessee Starbucks has been Maggie's home away from home.
I can usually hear someone greet me at the drive-thru despite not looking at them and know whether it's this customer or whether it's that customer.
It's a job she juggles with being a part-time student at the University of Tennessee and a full-time single mom.
Oh, we have to find the scroll.
I want to show my son that if you want to fight for something, you can do it.
Maggie says she was initially attracted to Starbucks' progressive social values and benefits for part-time workers. During the pandemic, she says her store was short-staffed, maintenance issues weren't being addressed, and COVID protections were lacking. When she learned about the Buffalo barista's fight, she was inspired to organize.
Others will say there are other ways to get this done.
Why is a union the solution?
It uplifts workers entirely. It gives us the opportunity to operate as a unit and have a collective say together about what we think our workplace should look like.
1 year ago today, her store voted to unionize.
Starbucks can do better for all of us, and we're here to stick together in solidarity and show them that that's what's going to happen.
But Maggie says she faced retaliation for her efforts in the form of reduced work hours, which she says has caused her to lose her benefits.
Tell me what the work environment is like at your store right now.
Right now, it's chaos. We are very often short-staffed. We're very often out of things.
In a statement to ABC News, Starbucks responding to retaliation claims, saying in part, "Where partners have been subject to corrective action, including separation, we have consistently held that they engaged in misconduct contrary to Starbucks' established policies and procedures, not in retaliation for their participation in or support of any concerted union activity." To the extent claims have been brought against Starbucks for violation of labor laws, the company strongly denies any wrongdoing. Although Maggie's store has unionized, the union Starbucks Workers United has not been able to come to an agreement with the company. In fact, no store in the U.S. has been able to. On the Hill, it wasn't just Schultz making his case. Some Republican members of the committee taking issue with the hearing itself.
But I don't want to be part of any witch hunt that vilifies any American business.
This is not a fair and impartial hearing.
Also testifying at the hearing was Rachel Gresler, a senior research fellow at conservative think tank The Heritage Foundation.
Employers shouldn't have to fear congressional harassment.
The issue of the unfair labor practices that are against Starbucks is a very small number. And so it's not really Congress's role to be hauling in CEOs of private companies and harassing them.
But before he left, Schultz suggested the company would meet at the bargaining table.
Will you make a promise to this committee that you will exchange proposals with the union so that we can begin to make meaningful progress?
On a single store basis, we will continue to negotiate in good faith.
Whether those meetings happen or not, Maggie and her fellow partners are determined to keep fighting.
You have some critics who say that the cost of the unions just gets passed down to the customer. How do you respond to those critics?
The cost gets passed down to the customer anyway by the corporation right now, and they just keep billions of dollars in profits. So wouldn't you prefer that the worker who's making your latte is able to afford their rent and gas in the same paycheck versus padding a CEO's pockets?
Our thanks to Rachel.
Up next, the Diane Sawyer exclusive. Actor Jeremy Renner in his first interview since the snowplow accident. His miraculous story of survival.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And finally tonight, actor Jeremy Renner opening up about that accident that nearly killed him. Diane Sawyer has the exclusive.
Do you remember the pain?
Oh, all of it. Yeah, I was awake through every moment. I'd do it again.
You'd do it again?
Yeah, I'd do it again. Because it's going right at my nephew.
Someone's been run over by a snowcat. Hurry. He's been crushed.
Now, there's a lot of blood over here.
8 ribs broken in 14 places. Yeah. Right knee, right ankle broken, left leg tibia broken, the left ankle broken, right clavicle broken, right shoulder broken, face eye socket, the jaw, the mandible broken, lung collapsed, pierced from the rib bone, your liver, which sounds terrifying.
Yeah. And then, like, what's my body look like? Am I just going to be like a spine and a brain, like a science experiment?
I heard that you had, in sign language, you said to your family, "I'm sorry."
Yeah.
Sorry.
I chose to survive. He's not going to kill me. No way.
Do you dream of doing those stunts again?
I've lost a lot of flesh and bone in this experience, but I've been refueled and refilled with love and titanium.
You look in the mirror, and do you see the same face?
No, I see a lucky man.
Jeremy Renner, the Diane Sawyer interview. A story of terror, survival, and triumph. Airs next Thursday, April 6th at 10 p.m. right here on ABC. And that's Nightline for tonight. You can watch all of our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here same time tomorrow. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.